The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Second hour live from Auburn, Alabama on a gorgeous mid-September day where big game is in the air. Jordan-Hare Stadium tomorrow afternoon around this time. The Penn State Nittany Lions will come to town. There's a lot of big games tomorrow and none more important perhaps than the one in College Station. It's a late game. ESPN and Holly Rowe will be on the call. Holly on the call for Miami and A&M. And Holly, good afternoon. It's always great to have you on these Friday afternoons. And maybe I'm imagining things, but I was flipping TV last night and I thought I saw you doing a WNBA game. Did I see correctly?
You did. I was doing game three of the WNBA finals last night in Connecticut, and I got up about 4 this morning to get to College Station. So I've been grinding, Paul, but here I am.
Yeah, I don't know why. Every time I start to think, well, maybe I could have used another 20 minutes of sleep, I think about not getting any at all, which is obviously what happened to you. That's pretty admirable. And I know there are other people on your crew that work hard and they get the reputation as the person who never sleeps. But I'm afraid that really belongs to you, Holly. I don't know how you do it. And how do you process doing multiple games and sports at the same time? I know you've done this many, many years, but what's the method to the madness?
I think the method to the madness is I just have it compartmentalized. Is, you know, I have a football brain, and when I stepped into the Aggies football facility, my brain clicks to, you know, the Aggies and what do they have to do, and Haynes King, Max Johnson, they're getting their center back. You know, like, I don't know, there's just a little football compartment in my brain where that lives, and then my WNBA compartment over here. So I really don't know how I do it. People keep asking me that, but I love it. So I think you just retain and store information because you love it.
And then finally, one more question on that. Tomorrow night, the game is 9 Eastern. I guess that's 8 Central. That's a late kick, especially for someone who's going across the country. And it's a long way from Connecticut to College Station. I've done that trip before, and it's not exactly nonstop. When you have a very late game like that, and I'm sure you do that often, is there anything to that, or do you try to get up a little bit later, or are you still up at the same time you normally are?
I think you get up at the same time that you normally are, and because you want to actually watch college football, you want to watch game day, you want to watch games that kick off at noon, and so part of it is you want to watch college football all day, and that's the beauty of doing the late game sometimes is you get to watch so much great football throughout the course of the day.
So let's get to the game, and there's no way of making this out to be anything other than a really big game. It was already a big game. You got Miami with Mario Cristobal and A&M, which was among the teams many thought could make a run at the playoffs. But suddenly, last Saturday afternoon, you get the big upset out there. And as you dig in and talk to people and try to get to know this game better, what have you learned all week?
Well, you know, I actually just left Jimbo Fisher's office, and I think one of the things I've learned is everybody wants to pin it on one person or pin it on the quarterback. And he said he's undecided right now what he's going to do at quarterback, but I won't be shocked if we see Max Johnson get some playing time. He is a terrific prospect at 6'5", 225. He's really good in the pocket. He has a great arm, and he's mobile. He's bigger, a better runner than you think at his 6'5 size. So I actually got to cover Max Johnson when he played for LSU against Alabama last year. And this is what I know about that kid. He's really tough. That was a hard-fought game. LSU was driving to possibly beat Alabama late in the season. And he really got knocked around in that game, and he just kept coming back and playing really well. So I think that, that's going to be something interesting to keep your eye on. But then also, Texas A&M gets other guys back from injury. Their center, who is 6'5", 325, will be back. They'll have their tight end back, most likely. They might get a defensive end back, who's a top prospect. We might see a change of kicker. So I still feel like here in week three, there's still a lot of moving parts for Texas A&M. They've got talent. They've got young guys. They've got a lot going on. But they've still got to come together and find what's the right combination.
Holly, let's talk about the other side of this. We know Miami has an elite quarterback. We know they have an elite coach. But this is a program that has come close often to returning to national prominence. We thought they were there a couple of years ago. It didn't last very long. But what do you see and what do you know from digging into this program?
Well, Mario Cristobal this week told our crew that, you know, part of the problem is the depth of talent. So they don't have quite maybe the size they need at linebacker. They don't quite have the depth that they might need up front on the offensive line. So I think this game, I mean, we say this all the time, Paul, and it's such a cliche, but it's actually how football works. This is going to be a game that's won up front, defensive line of Texas A&M, where they have a lot of talent, a lot of young, hungry guys rolling in there against this Miami offensive line. I think that that's going to be a real key, is does Van Dyke have time to operate? Can Miami get their offense rolling, or will this Texas A&M defense really show up? We did talk to Jimbo and Anaya Smith about the offense not getting enough plays last week. In this modern era of football, time of possession is not always a stat that matters anymore, but last week, with App State in the upset, time of possession really mattered because they possessed the football for 41 minutes. Texas A&M only ran 38 plays, Paul, and so their offense didn't get moving and didn't get clicking, and they couldn't get first downs. They would get off the field, and so then the defense would be back out on the field for a long time. So this has to be, for A&M, complementary football, where the defense is getting stops, they're getting off the field on third down, and then the offense is able to put some drives together and actually possess the football. Time of possession is going to matter this weekend.
Holly, many thanks. Always great to catch up with you on these Friday afternoons when we can lasso you in. Great to talk to Holly. Let's take a short break. We are live in Auburn, Alabama, where the guests will be coming by with great regularity. Jordan Rogers will be here shortly. We'll get his breakdown of this game and some of the other top games. Brian Harsin under an hour away right here, and we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Back in Auburn on a Friday afternoon, our Gridiron guest brought to you by Johnsonville. It's Jordan Rogers. I think it's pretty much locked in every week, isn't it?
Right.
So before we get going, last week in Nashville, you were the star of the show, the center of attraction. What was that
they
like?
They gave me an ATV. I mean, so,
Was it cool?
It was cool. You know, I'd been back around the program quite a bit. But not in that capacity, and it was actually just complete coincidence that my parents were coming out to visit my brother, who just had a baby in June that same weekend, so they were there. I don't think they'd been on campus since probably I played 2012, so really cool just to be back and get honored for whatever it was. It was a fun experience.
It was a great honor. And I mean, I know that most of the time when you're honored, you get to – soak it all in with your family and friends. You don't have to be live on television.
Yeah, I got about 3 minutes afterwards after I flipped the coin and they kicked off to say hi to my parents. I'm like, hey, I got to go. I got a game here in a couple hours. I got to hop on a plane. I got a two-hour flight to Baton Rouge. So
that's hilarious.
It was great to be out there. Like, been a while since I've been out there, you know, because when I do games, I go down there pregame. Right. But I got to go up 30, 40 minutes for a kick. Right. So to actually be down there at kickoff was kind of cool again. I haven't been down there in that environment in a while.
Well, what did you – well, since you left, you missed most of the carnage.
I did. I think, to a degree. I think Vanderbilt is – they're trending in the right direction. But anytime you're rebuilding a program, you're going to have hills and valleys. Like, those type of games sometimes are a really good learning experience. I thought they would put up a little bit more of a fight, but it's all in the path to continue to compete on a weekly basis, so –
Well, let's go from your college days under James Franklin to Penn State.
Oh, yeah.
Under James Franklin here tomorrow. You know James. He was incredibly successful there. He's had success at Penn State, but it just seems like it's always enough to get him a new contract, but not enough to satisfy everyone.
It's sustaining, right? I think one of the best things, one of James' best strengths is really he was a psychology major. So his entire, I think really the trajectory of his career has been about coming into a place and completely changing, from a psychological standpoint, the confidence, the culture, and he is one of the best at that. And I think sustaining success anywhere is really difficult. It would have been super difficult at Vandy, as great as he did for the couple years that he was there. It would have been hard. Penn State as well, just because the Big Ten is so competitive and getting more competitive. You know, 2016, I think they won the Big Ten championship, but since then kind of won 11 games three of the last 6 years, but obviously the last couple of years have been disappointing. But he's the kind of guy that can gather a new group and completely change their trajectory. So this is going to be a big test just because, look, I don't think Auburn's a great football team. I don't think Penn State's a great football team. But it's a big road test, and I think it's going to be a great benchmark for both these teams.
We've already seen in various situations where what we thought was a really good Utah team goes into this.
Yeah.
This place is equally as difficult. So what – when you look at Penn State against Auburn, where is the game won and lost?
I think for Auburn, they have to establish the line of scrimmage. And that sounds cliche. I'm going to tell you why. Because the biggest Achilles heel right now is TJ Finley. Or really not TJ, because I think he's getting a lot of negative energy. I think he's better than people are painting him to be. But if that running game doesn't establish the line of scrimmage and be consistent, they're hitting home runs and they're getting blown up a couple times. If they can't establish a play action passing game off that, TJ's not a drop back, throw it 30, 40 times a game. That's not him. They need to run the football well, play action pass off that, and Robbie Ashford has to be part of this game plan. And I think this is one of the rare times that a two quarterback system works, and it needs to continue to work, and they need to continue to find a bigger package for Robbie Ashford, but both of them equally. And on the other side of the ball, I think the advantage for Auburn defensively is up front. I think they have to affect Sean Clifford. They have to force turnovers. They have to get after him. Their pass rush, I think, is very underrated. And I think that's an area that they can really cause some damage. And when you do that, that's when the crowd gets into it. Penn State's not going to be fazed by the noise, right? But they may be fazed by the noise and the moment. If there's a big turnover, that's where they have to capitalize.
Let me bounce around to some other games because there are quite a few. Start the day in Columbia. This, you know, South Carolina fans are always confident this time of the year, although they're not as confident as they were a week ago. I mean, Georgia looks indestructible. We know that that's not always true, but it's just, yeah, it's hard not to believe that this team is that good.
They do right now, and I think this is an extremely tough test for South Carolina. South Carolina, they can't run the football right now, and they can't stop the run. That's not a good recipe in the SEC. It's just not, especially when you're playing Georgia. The wild card is Spencer Rattler. And look, I had him very highly ranked on my quarterback rankings. I'm not abandoning him. But there has been some mistakes, and he has left a lot on the table. The guy has got to learn to step up in the pocket. Plain and simple, you watch film, he makes an unreal throw after stepping up in the pocket, a throw that not many guys in this league can make. And the next play, he's got a clean pocket and he's escaping for no reason. So Marcus Satterfield and Shane Beamer have got to get him more consistent. That's the wild card. He's a guy who can go out there and make throws that nobody can make, and he can make it interesting. But if you can't stop the run and you can't run the football, you got no shot. So really, that's where this game is going to live and die. And to me, it's Georgia's going to overwhelm him.
The pass no longer really matters with Stetson Bennett, but what is different about him this year?
You cannot underestimate. Having been somebody that in high school, junior college, and Vandy, I was never not in a quarterback competition up until my senior year, literally. And I was in college for 6 years, five and a half. So you can't underestimate as a quarterback when you are constantly looking over your shoulder. What that does to the decisions you make, the confidence that you play with. As a quarterback, you can't play with even just a sliver of doubt. And I think Stetson is a very confident player, but the noise, it gets to you. Even if you have a flip phone, like he does. He's not on social media, but you still hear it. And so he's constantly looking over his shoulder. He's not anymore. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. He's playing more confident. But also, the style of football that Georgia is going to win with this year is different than last year. They're not going to have to be a play-action pass. Stetson throws it, you know, 15, 18, 20 times a game. It's going to be much more use the strength that you have, which is the receiver group, the tight end group. So Stetson's playing more confident, and the plan is allowing him to put up bigger numbers, which is why he's the Heisman favorite in the SEC right now. It's not even close, right? Georgia's going to be one of the best teams at the end of the year. Their best player right now is Stetson Bennett.
Wow. I heard you.
And that's coming from me.
Yeah.
I was critical of him last year. No, I mean, does that sound crazy of me to say that?
I was, like, jarred when we were having a meeting earlier and you said that. I'm like going, what happened to Bryce?
It's true. I mean, because I didn't have him ranked in my top five. I had him six going into the season because I didn't believe that Georgia was going to need him to be what he is right now. I knew they were going to be a little more balanced, but they're going to ride this offense on the shoulders of Stetson Bennett and their skill around him, and that just means he's going to keep putting up numbers. People can't compete with the guys that they have on roster, except for in Alabama, possibly, and maybe one or two others. Arkansas would be a tough team. But right now, he's right now the best player in the conference.
Two other games I want to ask you about. The one tomorrow afternoon or early evening in Baton Rouge. State's favored. LSU is coming off of a disastrous opening game. What do we make out of that?
Mississippi State has been grossly underrated.
Okay.
Since Jump Street, I have a ton of confidence in Zach Arnett as a defensive coordinator. They returned almost everybody on defense. And Will Rogers, again, gets lumped into the conversation of, well, he's an air raid quarterback. He puts up a lot of numbers. All he do is throw the football. Yeah, but he's also one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, one of the most accurate guys to push the ball downfield. So LSU has got to figure out how to get consistency out of Jaden to use their strengths. Their strengths are Kayshon Booty, Jeray Jenkins, Jack Besh, who's been grossly underused as well. They got to find a way to get him consistent through the air. Starts with the offensive line. But Kayshon Booty, if he's not a big part of this, there might be a point where he goes, I'm going to start getting ready for the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens in this day and age, right? So he's got to be a big part of the game plan. He will be. He was last week. It was Southern. Say what you want, but they tried to get him the ball a lot early. So I think Mississippi State's the better football team right now. The wild card is LSU. Kayshon Booty is the most talented player on the field. If he has a huge day, it's going to be interesting. B.J. Ojulari is back. Going to be interesting. Mississippi State's a better football team right now, though.
And finally, the game that is eagerly watched by all. Miami and Texas A&M. Let's start with A&M's quarterback situation, which seems like it's changing.
It is changing, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter if it's Haynes King. It doesn't matter if it's Max Johnson. And I'll tell you why. Because when you look at this offense, I said it last year before the Alabama game, and they did change in the Alabama game. They don't do anything. What I mean by that is they line up in 2x2 or 3x1. And I'm going to do a little more of a breakdown on this tomorrow at SEC Nation, dive into the numbers a little bit. They don't formationally stress you. They don't move pre-snap. And I'm talking like 80, 90% of their plays. are without motion and with a what we would call a traditional formation where 2x2, regular spacing, no stacks, no bunches, no tight sets. All that stuff stresses a defense. So what I mean when I say it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, you have to do a better job offensively of setting your guys up to get easy throws, to get completions. Did you watch the Chiefs-Chargers game last night? At least a little bit of it. I was watching it with this in mind, and I don't know if I saw one play where either team lined up in what we call just a normal formation, just regular spacing, 2x2. It's all stacks and bunches and movement pre-snap. Why? Because that confuses the defense. So Jimbo and Daryl Dickey have got to change the scheme to help their quarterback out, whether it's Max, Haynes, doesn't matter.
But hold on. I thought Jimbo Fisher was a quarterback whisperer. I thought he was a genius, and I'm sure he is or was, or maybe somebody was wrong about that. But why is he sticking to this format?
I don't know. I don't, honestly. Look, it's a pro-style system, which I love. I grew up in a pro-style system. There's a lot of – Nick Saban was a pro-style guy. 5 or 6 years ago, what did he do? He realized the game is changing. I have to change with it. So if you're going to be stagnant with formations, you have to go fast tempo, right? You got to do something to throw the defense off. They're stagnant with formations. They're slow with their tempo. So something has to change. Last year, it was the Alabama game. They moved Anaya Smith all over the place and gave Alabama fits. Then they didn't do it again. Last week had to be the kick in the butt to say, we're not good enough just to line up. I know we recruit whoever we want, but we're not good enough just to line up in front of people and win.
You know this guy. You spent a lot of time with him. Is he likely to change tomorrow, or is this?
I think he is because the noise outside the building has become so loud.
Okay.
That you have to. You have to look at yourself. And I know Jimbo, and he's confident in his system. It's been successful, right? At times, but it hasn't been recently.
At times.
At times, right? But the game is changing. Look at the Sean McVay, the Stranahan tree in the NFL. There are 7 head coaches right now. Chargers, Rams, Green Bay, Niners, Vikings, and there's one more, all from this tree of Mike Shanahan, and the basis of it is multiple personnel groups and varied formation. That's why when you watch a game last night, offense formations are all over the place. That's because that's how you win in this day's football. You have to confuse the defense and stress them before the ball is snapped. There's too many good athletes. Tempo is not as effective as it used to be. So you have to find ways to create an advantage. That's the NFL. That's the good offenses in college, right? That's what Bill O'Brien does at Alabama. And they've done the last 3 or 4 years is being really creative with formation. Sark did it. Bill O'Brien's doing it. A&M's got to do it. You can tell I like this stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued.
But I watched the tape, and I'm just like, what are we doing? We got to move. As a quarterback, I'm sitting there going, man, if you just stack those guys, it creates a little green grass. It confuses the defense. It's just – it's not super complicated.
You said they did it once last year.
Yeah.
Is this something that you can show up on?
100%. Me and Tim Tebow were talking earlier, like, maybe he didn't want to put too much on Haynes King or, you know, but – it's just formations, right? That's on the receivers. Whether I call double right or I call trips right X nasty, which means a tight split on the backside, it's the same to the quarterback. It's just the receiver that goes, okay, my split is now here, right? So it's not super complicated. It can get very complicated if you want it to, but I think the low-hanging fruit is just be more multiple and give the defense different looks. And that's going to create easier throws for Max Johnson, easier completions for Anaya Smith and A-Chain to get the ball in space, which is
so
the goal.
Going back to Appalachian State, I can certainly understand why you were – I mean, vanilla is the overused
yes.
word. But as you're seeing the game slip away from you, can you do something then, or is it –
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm gonna repeat this tomorrow on Nation. The first 8 plays that Texas A&M ran – accounted for the entire first quarter. As an offensive coordinator, you're working off your script, right? You script 15 plays. So pretty much those 8 plays, they plan that all week. These are the first plays that we're going to run. So from the second quarter on, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, A&M moved any type of movement, motion, moving a running back, moving a tight end 4 times the rest of the game. So you saw what they did early. You moved a little bit, different formations, and then you didn't do anything.
That'll be on tomorrow morning. What time? Because I'm going to get up early and
yeah,
watch.
Well, tomorrow, SEC Nation, what time do we start here? 9? 9? Yeah, we start at 9. We're going to do a deep dive into really – Tim's got some tape. I got some more numbers to talk about this A&M offense. It's not doomsday. There are easy ways to fix this and to get a better product right away.
Are you available to come in and consult?
I'm available.
It seems like somebody needs to.
Here's the thing. I'm not smarter than Jimbo Fisher. I'm not smarter than Daryl Dickey. They know this. So behind the scenes, there's more going on than probably I know, right? So we will see a different scheme. Right. We will see a more creative scheme. I think it maybe just took a little kick in the butt.
Jordan Rogers here to save the A&M program.
No.
Jordan, great to see you.
Appreciate it.
Fascinating stuff. Can't beat that. We are up against a break. We have a lot more visits to go here. Brian Harsin, 30 minutes away. I'm sure he was taking notes. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And as we say hello to you, let's remind you what we're doing here in the next few minutes. Brian Harsin will be here in just 15 minutes, the head coach at Auburn, getting ready for a huge game against Penn State. Laura drops by, Dave Pasch on the call for Ole Miss and Georgia Tech. McGee, and that's just 5 o'clock, the 5 o'clock Eastern hour. And Katie George will also join us as she covers the Mississippi State LSU game. Let's head back to College Station. That has been a pretty big spot. Todd McShay joining us. Always good to say hello to Todd. Todd, thank you for the time. Let's dig right in here. We've been talking to a number of people about the quarterback situation at Texas A&M. There's rumors of change. Good afternoon. And tell us what's going wrong for them and what type of talent there is at that position, which we all thought there was a lot. Maybe we were wrong. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. Listen, we all thought coming into the season that there was a plan, and Jimbo did have a plan, Jimbo Fisher. But you look at last week, and everyone always says, well, it's not just the quarterback. It was partly the quarterback's fault. Haynes King did not play to the level they expected. There were too many easy throws that got missed. There were too many bad decisions that he made that really disrupted drives. They wound up with the ball, I think, 38 plays the entire game, and Appalachian State controlled the football the entire game. But part of the problem, too, is the offensive line has had multiple injuries. They haven't had a lot of time to play together. They're getting their starting center back this week, which should help. And that's going to be a big focal point with Max Johnson most likely coming in. I should say Jimbo Fisher did not commit to Max Johnson, but everything I'm hearing here at College Station is that Max Johnson is going to be the starter in this game. I'd be shocked if he didn't trot out there when the first time Texas A&M has the ball. And the thing that he brings that Haynes King did not bring is experience, especially playing in the SEC and going up against these physical defenses. And I know they haven't played an SEC opponent, and they're not in Miami this week, but he's been through a lot of wars with LSU. He's tough. He distributes the ball well. He's got a big arm. He's not overly mobile in the pocket, but he can get outside and throw on the run and pick up some first downs here and there. So I think you're going to see a lot more success, but it's going to start for the offensive line, from that offensive line this week, and then the quarterback will be able to distribute the ball to A-Chain, the running back, and Anaya Smith, who's one of the underrated stars, I think, in college football right now.
While there is some question about what type of productivity we'll see out of the A&M quarterback situation, there is no doubt about what we're going to see on the other side. Tyler Van Dyke is all everything. You're the guru of college talent. Tell us about him and what he looks like to you.
Yeah, I mean, he looks the part, right? He's 6'4", he's 225 pounds. He has some mobility. Again, it's not his strength, but he can get outside and throw on the run. He has a big arm. The ball just explodes off his hand. Now, I'll say this. I liked his tape last year more than I liked the tape when I studied from Georgia Southern last week. I thought he was tight in the first quarter. I thought a lot like watching Anthony Richardson a week ago. Everything was on a line. There wasn't a lot of touch and timing. As the game went on, you saw him kind of get comfortable and in a groove. I don't think he can come into this environment, you know, with the 12th man, Kyle Field, SEC, night game, primetime game, and have the first quarter he did against Southern Miss in this one, because it won't work for Miami. So he's going to have to get off to a faster start. There's some things in his game, like locking onto his first read, that I think has got to improve over his career. But there's no question, he has first-round physical ability. I just don't think he's there yet, but he's only a one-year starter who's coming in and still just kind of figuring things out.
Todd, you were in Gainesville the other day. I want to get your thoughts on Anthony Richardson, because Saturday morning we were ready to declare him the all-everything, and not that anybody is giving up, but what did you see Saturday night?
I saw a young, inexperienced quarterback who has all the talent in the world. I'll say this about AR. He is the most physically gifted quarterback in the country, and I don't think it's close. I think he can be a superstar in college football. I think he'd be a superstar in the NFL. I mean, that's how much talent he has. He's just not there yet. He completed 33 passes a year ago, and that was just his third start, you know, with the Florida Gators. So you see all the talent and all these idiot draft analysts come out and say he could be a high first round pick, and everyone in the media is saying maybe Heisman Trophy after a couple games, after one game at that point. But the reality is he's going to go through some bumps. And I think he's still kind of understanding the whole field. I think he's still struggling with when to take a little bit off of his fastball, not everything on a line, and realizing some touch throws versus when you've got to drive the ball in and fit it in a tight window. And let's also give some credit here, too. Mark Stoops and Kentucky's defensive coaching staff did a brilliant job. One of the best defensive game plans I can remember seeing in 20 years of doing this. They knew exactly what they had to do to stop AR. The mobility part, they took away. He was not a runner in that game. It was gap discipline up front, perfect leverage and coverage in the secondary. And it's one thing to have a, you know, draw it up during the week to have a great game plan. It's another to get your team to buy in. I mean, every single player on that defense bought in for four quarters, and the game plan worked. So it was a frustrating night, don't get me wrong. It really was. And I expected a lot more out of Anthony Richardson. But we'll see him learn from that, and I think we'll see him get better and better as the season progresses.
Todd, suddenly people are talking about Stetson Bennett as the starter, and this is a guy that we all know his backstory, and you've done plenty of analysis of his tape. What looks different for the Georgia quarterback?
Confidence, I think. Probably an off season of listening to everyone say that, well, they won it despite Stetson. He can only, you know, do so much, and he's limited. He looks like a guy who worked his tail off in the off season, got a little bit bigger and stronger, and is seeing things the way a fifth year starter should see things, or the way an NFL quarterback sees things. You know, everything's processing quickly, and that's allowing him to get the ball out on time. It's allowing him to know when to take chances versus when to dial it back in or check down. Obviously, who hasn't been impressed with what we've seen so far? I'm just excited to see him continue to do that as the season goes on.
And finally, one of the big stories of the week, Todd, it's not so much Bryce Young, but maybe a dearth of elite talent around him. When you look at the Alabama team and the Texas game and you project forward, what does it look like to you?
I mean, I'm always careful to say there's not talent at Alabama. We know they're loaded in terms of talent on every level, right? But it doesn't take a super scout to figure out that it's not the same guys on the perimeter. It's not the Ruggs and Judy and Devontae Smith and all the guys that they've had in previous years. You know, Jameson Williams a year ago was an absolute star, the best player in college football, in my opinion, last season. So when you don't have that, it makes it difficult. Now you can't stretch the field as much. There are young guys there, and they're going to kind of step into it and hopefully start to develop. Jermaine Burton's a really good player, the Georgia transfer. But it's not the same. I think we've all seen that. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs has been really good in the backfield. Their offensive line has been solid, not exceptional. Bryce Young is having to carry this team in a little bit more than he had certainly a year ago. and as a scout, just evaluating it, you love to see this. Now, how is he going to handle himself? We saw in the fourth quarter what he did and how he responded when the game was on the line. And we might have to see that a little bit more out of him this season than we expected to coming in the year, because there's not that speed on the perimeter that Alabama has been used to having for, what, the last 4 or 5 years?
Just about 30 seconds left. Do you see anything different from Will Anderson Jr.?
No, I mean, he's a star. I mean, everyone is blocking him. They're doubling him. They're chipping him. They're doing all sorts of different things to try to take him out of the game, and he's still making impact plays. I mean, he had the one mistake with the late hit, but to me, he's the best defensive player in all of college football. If it's not a quarterback that goes one in the 2023 NFL draft, it's going to be Will Anderson. And if Will Anderson was eligible to be in this past year's draft, 2022, he would have been the first overall pick, not Trayvon Walker out of Georgia.
Great stuff, as always, from Todd McShay, live from College Station. We are in Auburn as we reach the midpoint of our Friday afternoon program. We look forward to visiting with the Auburn head coach coming up here shortly. Stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.